Destination Freedom. Destination Freedom, dramatizations of the great democratic heritage of the Negro people, is brought to you by station WMAQ as a part of the pageant of history and of America's own Destination Freedom. On the south side of Chicago, there stands a public housing project, one of the largest in the Midwest, named for a female pioneer in the fight for the freedom of the press and for woman suffrage. She was Ida B. Wells, and in a chapter entitled Woman with a Mission, we tell her story.
My story started in the post-Civil War days of Holly Springs, Mississippi, when the chaos and confusion of the war came to an end, and where I grew up quietly curious about the world around me and got a rare education in a school for freedmen.
We'll not let you waste that education, Addie.
My mother was always saying this. She was a deeply religious woman who had raised 8 children, and to me, the eldest, she would say,
I want you to do something with your education besides squander it. Your father and I have decided you leave Holly Springs and stay on the farm with your grand folks. You stay there till the yellow fever has stopped striking down those of us who are trapped here in the slums. You hear that?
I heard it in a daze. Yellow fever was filling the graves with men and women, white and black, around Holly Springs. A great plague had come down on us.
Out on the farm, the air is clean and fresh, and the folks will need help with the cotton. There you'll have a chance to live through the epidemic.
But what about you and Father and the children?
Never mind about us, child. We get along all right. And if we don't, girl, it's a comfort to know we left a piece of us who's got her bearings, who can stand up for herself in the world against evil and carry the torch of freedom your folks carried in the Civil War. If anything happens to me or your father, remember the sword you've got.
My education, she kept calling a sword.
Hold on to it. Do something with it. Keep the children together.
Yes, Mother.
Now, child, ain't no time for tears and fearful looks. The Lord takes no one till his time come. He came to me in a vision, and he told me to spare you all I could. Now, pack your things and get off to the country, child. Lord, it's hot in town. Sun's a kettle full of hot copper, and somebody's turned it upside down. Go on, child.
The sun was a kettle full of hot copper. And everywhere the heat and the yellow fever set records for deaths in the South. Everywhere except in the cool of the farm where I went to work in the fields and the gardens, and where every day I called out to refugees fleeing from the city and to the postman to ask about news from the folks in Holly Springs. You got any letters from town, Mr. Postman?
No, none for you, gal. None for you.
I kept calling out to him between my turns in the field, and anxiety turned my days into misery, and for months I felt sealed off from life in town. Fever hounded my heels, struck at me while I worked, and I fought it off and got up again. And one day when I called, Mr. Postman, you got anything for me?
No, but I've got to deliver a letter to the Nixons. Nobody's home.
Well, they had the fever.
Oh. Dead?
Dead.
So it's gotten out here now. Lord, they'll work the grave diggers to death before the fever's over with. Now about this here letter for the Nixons.
Yes?
Dead folks can't read nobody's writing.
No.
And there ain't no use in wasting good writing.
No.
And since you're educated, it'd do well if you read the Nixon's letter. Yeah, it'd sort of honor the dead.
Well,
it's the least you can do.
I tore open the Nixon's letter. There came over me the eerie feeling that it was intended for me. And even though it spoke of love and hope and hardships of my neighbor, there was a postscript that said,
there's a gal living out there on the farm from Holly Springs named Ida. Jim and Lizzie Wells, her ma and pa, both just died of the fever this morning. Give her the sad story, but tell her to stay where she is. She wouldn't live hardly a day back here unless she's immune. Besides, if the children live, old Jim's friends will take care of them. We all take care of them.
Yeah, gee, I'm sorry. Awful sorry.
What train did the letter come on?
12:20. Comes out of Holly Springs in the morning. Leaves here at night. Why, you...
When the train comes back, I'll be on it.
You're a fool, gal. Look, you stay here. Take it easy. Nothing you can do but bury the dead.
Somehow, I think I've got a good many things to do now. Things I've been avoiding all my life. Help me get the train.
All right, I'll see you to the station.
He took me to the train, and I got aboard. I rode the train with its coaches draped in black until it slid into Holly Springs. And I walked into the house I was born in and found the children sick. And one dead. I nursed them to health again, and when the epidemic had ended, when the news spread that a lone girl was caring for a family of seven, the influential civic-minded men of the town gathered and came over to the house one by one.
Howdy, Ida B. Y'all worried to death of what's going to happen to you and your family, huh?
Oh, I've been thinking about it.
Then put it out of your mind. Judge Strudge, myself, and some of the boys here look after things for you.
That's what we all come for, Ida B. We're going to take a mighty big load off in your hands, huh, boys?
That's right, Judge.
Yeah. Good. Then let's get on with it. Gather around the table, boys. Get yourself chairs. Now, Ida B., pass round that gallon of cider while us men folk figure.
Hurry up, Ida.
Atta gal. You all make some man a mighty good wife one of these year days.
She will, Joe.
Well, swig, boys. Let's get down to business. Only way to save this family is to divide it up.
Yeah, sure, I judge.
The men drank and called out the children that were left, and after much talk and choosing, after much careful speculation upon the merits of each child, divided them accordingly.
Now, Ida B., we got this thing figured. Your sisters there can go over to old Mars Mitchell's. He's looking for two young gals who can be trained as domestics. You know, good servants nowadays are hard to find.
Yes, they are. Yes, certainly are.
Well, that takes care of the little gals. Now, the boys there. Well, there's need for good carpenter apprentices. Yes. Best thing we can do for him is to send him over to Carpenter Calloway.
Excellent idea, Judge.
Fine. I guess all right. Yes. Now, we get down to the cripple gal, Eugenia. Only sensible and logical things to put her in the poorhouse, where she won't be no burden to no living soul.
Good idea.
And now, we get down to where there's just Ida B. left.
Good old Ida.
Fine gal.
Ida B., the world's somewhat hard on women, some say. But I've always said a pretty woman and a smart one ought to be able to make it alone, one way or the other. Now that we've done our neighborly duty in disposing of the Wells children, we'll gather them out of your way, Ida B., and deliver them where they belong. Rise and shine, boys.
They rose from the table, jesting, winking, and jotting down the arrangements for the disposition of the members of my family as one would jot down the disposition of furniture. And only when they were all settled and standing did I ask, is everything arranged, gentlemen?
Oh, very well, Ida B., very well. We leave you a note telling where each child's been put. It should make your heart glad to know where they're going.
I already knew where they were going, Judge.
Huh? Come now. You couldn't have. We all didn't even know
till you... The children, Judge, are not going anywhere.
What? What's that you saying, gal?
I say the children are not going anywhere. They stay here with me.
Wait a minute.
Now, gal, see here. There's sore need for folk who can work.
Not the children.
Colored children gotta be started out right. Now, I know the law on these things. It's on our side. We've been kind with you, but we can be otherwise.
The Wells children won't be divided.
How you figure on raising them? Who all's gonna feed them?
If no one else will, I will.
Boys, These kids are needed on the work farms. What are you all standing around for? Hold them off! Hold them off!
There was a gun on the wall, a rifle that had belonged to my father. While the judge talked, and while the men gathered up the children, I quietly took it down.
Woman, who are you pointing that gun at now?
Leave the children and get out.
You all don't mean...
I said all of you. Get out.
You all wouldn't shoot us, woman.
Slavery is over. You won't send these children out to no work farms. Touch them and I'll shoot.
Well, I believe she will. I guess you would shoot us, woman. All right. You chose to fight with men's weapons. You gotta expect us to fight white back with them. Y'all gone a long way up the wrong road. Y'all gone too far to turn back and be forgive. Keep your brood, and may they be the death of you.
I finally lowered the gun. I had won. I had taken the first step toward realizing the dreams I had inherited from my mother. Thereafter, I thirsted not for less, but for more freedom. Thereafter, men looked askance at me as I worked and vied with them for a livelihood for myself and my brood. Thereafter, they often spoke in whispers as I passed.
Why don't she stay in a woman's place? Why does she keep a roaming and looking for trouble?
She's a stormy woman.
She's a crazy woman.
Restless like a river.
Who does she think she is? Where does she think she's going? Where does she think she's going?
I went about what I believed was my mission. Somehow, to bring more freedom into the world I was born in. And I began by teaching in the country schools. I bought a mule, and I'd ride 16 miles each day out into the country. I taught in schools where there was no oil for lamps and no candles. And I would sit before the blazing wood fires during the long winter evenings and read to the children of the cotton farmers. I rode the mule for 7 years. And one day I decided to ride the train. It was the year that civil rights laws had been swept from the state statutes. We were speeding to Memphis.
Tickets? Have your tickets ready, please. Tickets?
Here, conductor.
Thanks, ma'am. You. You're colored.
Very much.
Hereafter, colored ride in separate coaches. Take the smoker, woman. You didn't hear what I said.
I heard you perfectly.
Well, the law said...
I paid for equal accommodations. I intend to have them. That's the only law I respect.
You'll do what you're told, or I'll see why not.
Oh, he lashed out at me and tried to haul me from the seat. I sank my teeth into his arm.
Oh!
He went out and came back with a baggage man and another man and another. And when the train stopped, they put me off. It was not the first time in the land a Negro had been put off a train because of the segregation laws. It was the first time the case went to court, and Judge Pierce in Circuit Court gave a decision.
In the opinion of this court, the introduction of race segregation on public conveyances is against the Constitution of the United States and against all tenets of human decency. Therefore, the plaintiff is awarded $500 damages.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Miss Wells, yours is the first such case to come to court. It was lucky you resisted the new law.
The law is wrong and tyrannical, Your Honor.
Is that why you resisted?
I believe resistance to tyranny is obedience to God.
I see. The case is closed.
But the case was not closed. The decision was reversed, and segregation settled like a noose around the system in the South. And I ventured again to use my sword by teaching in Memphis.
You're that stormy woman from Holly Springs.
The board examiner in Memphis looked over me and my papers.
Let me advise you. Teaching's good job, Memphis. Pays enough to take care of your family. But my advice is to remember that it's easier to be fired than to be hired. Don't let your tongue stray to the wrong subject.
What could be the wrong subject?
Segregation. Any of this talk against the way the two races live peacefully and harmoniously as they do now. You all passed the examination. You're on. But be careful with your tongue.
I began by being careful. I shut my eyes to what I saw, the misappropriation of funds, to the one-sided way education was handled under the segregated system. I took up writing, and I edited a little church newspaper. But slowly, as I read of the work of other women pioneers in America, Jane Addams, Susan B. Anthony, my job became clearer. My mission was to resist tyranny wherever I found it. And with this in mind, I took my savings one afternoon over to John Fleming, the editor of a small Memphis newspaper. He wanted to sell a third of its stock.
Well, I don't like the idea of doing newspaper business with a woman. There's no good will come of it.
You're superstitious.
Well, perhaps. But I've got a notion you intend to put into practice. A good many of the principles that men around here only preach. And if you do, there'll be trouble.
I'll try and be ready for it.
Well, what do you intend printing?
Well, I'd like to print the true story of Memphis and to tell the truth about graft and segregation in the education system here.
I see. And you work in the school system?
Yes.
Then I think you'd better make sure you learn the newspaper trade well enough to earn a living by it. Because once you criticize the school board, you'll need a new job. Well, maybe you can carry out the title of our newspaper, Free Speech. I can see with you on the staff, we'll live up to every word of it, too.
And I did live up to the name of the newspaper I became part owner of. I printed the stories of the school systems of Memphis and the South. And in the fall of the new term, the board chairman reminded me.
Before you took this job, I told you to beware of your tongue. You think the town of Memphis is going to be disturbed by a meddling country woman, you're mistaken. Effective immediately, I must ask you to leave your job with the Board of Education. And if you're wise, you'll leave Memphis, too.
I was not very wise. I stayed on at my newspaper and learned to write my editorials harder and sharper, and the circulation of Free Press picked up. The people of Memphis was noticing the difference in what we printed and what had passed for truth, and others were beginning to notice it.
Say, look at this, Ida.
Yes?
The Memphis Appeal is running an editorial against you. Listen to this. It's reported that the real radical behind the so-called newspaper, Free Speech, is a wild woman from Holly Springs. You want me to read on?
Go on.
Well, the Appeal wants her to know that since the results of the Civil War have been repealed, Memphis is likely to forget, when its wrath is aroused, that the radical instigator with a masthead, resistance to tyranny is obedience to God, is a woman. There has never been a lynching in Memphis, but before we allow a woman like the so-called editor to continue to print such articles attacking legal segregation in this state, there may yet be one. Now, you see?
I see.
What do you intend to do?
To go on. There's a Negro grocer on Beale Street sending us reports that he's been forced to live in the Negro neighborhood.
Oh, grocer's always complaining about this and that. It's just an ordinary story, Ida. Just an ordinary story.
I went out on the ordinary story. I went into the store of the small grocer to buy bread and to find why he was not wanted in business.
You want my story, ma'am?
I'm from the Free Speech. You've been writing to us. What is it?
Forget them notes I've been writing you, ma'am. They won't do no good now. Trouble done started.
What trouble?
Trouble over who's to profit off the business here in the colored neighborhood. I's marked to go. Tried to tell the police about it, but they're not on my side. Something's coming.
What?
I don't know. Maybe lynching. Maybe my own if I stay.
But I'd stay till my last drop of blood was gone. If anybody'd stand with me.
I'll be with you.
You the woman.
What man'll stand with you?
You only got a little old small paper. It'd be like a lost voice in the wilderness.
Sometimes one clear voice is worth 100 cloudy ones. Stick to your store. I'll stick to my newspaper. He stuck. And every day I told the story of the growing pressure against him to abandon his business and how prejudice was used against him like a weapon. And the storm rose, and I was in the center of it. My manager worried.
Ida, the other newspapers refuse to print this here grocer's story, and they're stronger than we are.
We're keeping on.
You're looking for trouble, and trouble's one thing that's not hard to find.
My press kept rolling. I found trouble, but I had found the truth, and the circulation was rising faster than any of the local papers in the city. And so were the threats against a grocer who stood his ground. Each day, the papers who printed the words of the Ku Klux Klan shot words at me. Manager Fleming would read them in the mornings.
Well, see, you've made the front page of the Appeal again, Miss Editor.
That's not news.
But this is. They're calling upon a committee to take the law into his own hands and close your paper.
It's your newspaper, too.
Well, yes, but I'm not going to die for it. Believe me. The Klan backers, he'll do anything to shut you up.
Are you afraid?
Well, you're not. I'm not. But tomorrow, you go and get this grocer and get him out of town. Get him out quick.
I promised to talk to the grocer. I went home that evening and thought of what I would say to him. I never had to visit the grocer. That night, someone was striking at my door. I got up and opened it. I looked out at masked faces, and one asked,
"You Ida, that newspaper writing woman?"
Yes.
"We brought a letter for you. Special delivery, sort of."
"This time of night?"
"People like you pay more attention to your messages when they come this time of night. Clayton, what are you boys waiting on? Bring up the lady's letter."
In the dark, I could see the sheets move, then stop, and lay something at my doorstep.
"Lay it right down on the welcome mat. There's your letter, lady."
What is it?
"You're educated, colored girl. You can read, can't you? Or would you maybe want one of the boys to open the envelope for you? Clayton, unseal the lady's mail for her like a gentleman, like a true gentleman. There you are, girl. Scared to look and read?"
I looked down at the object near my feet. It was the body of the grocer. Face twisted in pain, noose around his neck.
"What you read, newspaper gal? It says it's the first lynching ever happened in Memphis. It says stop your yelping and hollering or you'll follow him."
I read. I understood. My head throbbed and ached for days. I wanted to run, to scream, to hide. But my feet and my vocal cords would not obey. And when the drums faded from my head, there was something left, standing clear. When I read the newspaper account of the lynching, of how the grocer had been accused of rape, I knew, as no one else in Memphis seemed to know, that the real motive behind all lynching was not the moral issue pretended, but underneath it was a matter of murder for money and jobs. The base of all race terror pounded itself into my head as a weapon to enslave a people at the bottom of the economic scale. And the moral charges were just the envelope of the letter.
"You mean you're going to print all this in an editorial after what happened?"
"Print this and more."
"Well, I won't set it up in type."
"I'll set it myself. The name of this newspaper, remember, is Free Speech."
"Print that and you print your obituary, Ida. As sure as you stand, they'll strike you down." "Yeah. Look outside the window. A gang's gathering."
"Oh, yeah. I see them. Hand me my bag."
"You got a gun?"
"Yeah.
I bought it after the lynching. If anyone comes to kill me, I'll not die alone. I'll take some of them with me.
You're a strange woman, Ida. Like they say, you don't know a woman's place. You fear no man.
I fear only God. And these are not his disciples. Print the editorial. I took over the paper alone, and each day is a toll of lynching swept over South, breaking through the Reconstruction period. I exposed the motive behind the waves of terror and demanded a fair share of the fruits of the land for all who lived in it. I published my paper while the clamor for me to stop grew. And I escaped the fate of my grocer friend by a curious accident. I had been asked to come to New York to tell my story to a publisher who wanted to know the latest news about the city I lived in. But when I arrived, I found he had news much later than mine. He said,
"Are you really Ida B. Wells, the publisher of The Free Speech?"
"I am. You invited me here."
"You're the luckiest woman alive."
"What are you talking about?"
"Haven't you read the papers?"
"I just got off the train."
"Well, then you don't know. I'm afraid you won't be able to print this interview with me in your newspaper."
"Why not?"
"The morning papers say, last night in Memphis, a committee of citizens visited your home. They didn't find you. Then they went to your publishing house, wrecked it, destroyed the type, burned down the building, and left a note on the ashes that said, 'Anyone trying to publish The Free Speech again will be punished by death.' Here. You read it for yourself."
I didn't need to read it to know that I had been exiled from my home. That there was only one condition under which I could go back. And that was that somehow I could, by working everywhere, bring freedom and equality home. And when the publisher asked,
"Where do you intend going now?"
"In the same direction I've been going. Towards freedom, and with those who will fight for it." I went over the country and across the ocean and joined with men and women in the fight for freedom of speech and equal rights for women. I believed that a freedom that allowed the bigoted or the powerful to restrict the freedom of others was no freedom at all. I did not believe that free murder was amongst men's states' rights. I worked with Jane Addams and Susan B. Anthony for women's suffrage, and we won. I set up clubs and organizations, and I saw them turn into urban leagues and into welfare leagues. But wherever I traveled, till the day I died, many men shook their heads and said,
"Why don't she stay in a woman's place? Why does she keep roaming and looking for trouble?
She's a stormy old woman.
She's a crazy woman.
Restless like a river and a tongue like a flaming sword.
Where does she think she's going? Who does she think she is anyway?"
I was Ida B. Wells. I was going toward a wider freedom. Freedom for all the men and the women in the world. For I believed that resistance to tyranny was obedience to God.
You have just heard Destination Freedom's dramatization of the story of Ida B. Wells, famous social welfare worker and woman editor. Destination Freedom is written by Richard Durham and produced under the direction of Homer Heck. The role of Ida B. Wells was played by Weslyn Tilden. Others were Janice Kingslow, Jonathan Hole, George Kluge, Jack Lester, Fred Pinkard, and Jess Pugh. The special music was composed by Emil Soderstrom and played by Elwin Owen and Jose Bethencourt. This is Charles Chan inviting you to be with us again next Sunday morning at this same time, when Destination Freedom will tell the story of the Negro poet Paul Dunbar. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.